This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. This week on React Podcast, we sit with Paul Henschel and talk animation. Paul is the creator of React Spring, a library for animating UI based on Spring physics. We talk about the library's origin, its future, and how to create lasting beauty on the web. Our sponsor is Git Prime. You know how to debug code, but how are you at debugging your development process? Drop in a console log to see who's commenting on PRs, a timeout to see how long it takes to merge a feature after completion, maybe run a profile on who's giving the most actionable feedback or which parts of the code base are chronically resistant to change. You probably don't do this because you don't have the tools. Well, now you do. Git Prime is a debugger for your development process, where they know how to locate and eradicate bugs. They've done this with Atlassian, PayPal, Adobe, VMware, Sentry, and so many more. To learn about 20 ways they help teams debug their processes, check out their free book, 20 Patterns to Watch For in Your Engineering Team. Get it at gitprime.com/20patterns. That's the number 20 patterns. And start debugging your development process today. Git Prime, engineers build business. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael, thanks. And thanks also for having me.
It is super good to have you. I'm glad to have you on. I am always excited to talk with people about animation libraries and techniques and everything, because it is something that is so outside of my wheel set, outside of my comfort zone. So I'm so excited to have you on the show to talk about React Spring. But first, I just have to ask, what does your Twitter name mean? It feels very intentional. And so I have to know, what does it mean?
Yeah, no, it doesn't mean anything. I was just like hacking on the keyboard. Uh-huh. I have like this weird thing that like on every social media platform I go, I have like a different name.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's I don't know actually why. It's at some like sort of perspective is really stupid. So I like bleed followers and I start always from scratch. But I don't know. That's just the way it is.
I like this idea because it does get kind of harder and harder to find a Twitter name or like a social media name that you can get everywhere. So I like this idea of just kind of going with a random one and being like, it's a new thing.
Yeah, I guess I did it for for anonymity. My English is kind of rough.
Anonymity. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is terrible. Sometimes I want to tell people what's my Twitter handle, and I don't even know myself. So,
I had to check quite a few times as I was linking to you in the tweets where we were asking for help. It's like, did I get the right zeros and A's and X's?
Yeah, so.
So you have if you're going for anonymity, you're not succeeding there because you have an amazingly popular open source project in React Spring. And I want to talk with you about that. So first, what is your history in animation? Like what brought you to solving the animation problem in React?
Actually, it didn't start in React. It started with Android. I made something like a custom firmware or something like this. I got my first smartphone was a Google Nexus. And at heart, I'm something like a tinkerer. I got this device and I thought, hey, I can make this different. I want to change everything. And I started to like hack away. It was at the time was open source. It was called AOSP, Android Open Source Project. I forked this. And I founded something that later was called Paranoid Android. It got really, really big, like hundreds of thousands of users later. But I started with nothing. And you could do some crazy stuff. And everything was like moving around. And this was the first time I got really in touch with animation. I got to know how hard it actually is to do it right. And yeah, that was the first exposure that I had. And React came a little bit later. Actually, I went into React and I didn't animate anything because I only knew like CSS, and for me it didn't, I don't know, it wasn't good enough. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like the schism between like my code, my view, and something like classes. I didn't like it. But eventually I had to animate something, and this is how it started for me. I had no idea, actually. I'm not like the professional on the stuff. I was just like bumping into this, basically.
So what were you doing in Android at the time? Were you working on an Android application, and that's what got you started in Android?
No, it was basically really a fork of the Android system. And at this time it was called like a ROM or firmware.
Okay.
I don't know. You install it on your phone. And you can do basically everything. So if you want, you can look it up afterwards. It's called Paranoid Android. But I don't do this anymore. But this is how I got into it. And for instance, I changed stuff like I removed the buttons, and then you have some weird Pi control that you can, I don't know, navigate with your thumb. And basically everything I did was like moving around. And for this, I needed motion or animation. And this is the first time I like created a little library for myself to abstract it a little bit better. And this is how it started for me.
That's awesome. So what is it that caught your attention about React when it came out?
To be honest, at first I hated it. Now people talk about this J6 shock or something.
Yeah.
It totally hit me. I mean, I didn't even know how it works. I just saw like a component on the React website. And I had no idea what is this, and I just wasn't used to it. But eventually it got so big that I couldn't like avoid it anymore. And I was like shot down. I was like, it was crazy that I studied it like 1 or 2 hours and I could do it. I knew I can go and run and make something. It was crazy because I come from like a native background. And in my career, I needed, I don't know, months to get WPF, some Windows framework. And I don't know, Angular also took me a long time to get. So there comes this little framework and with an API that is like really small. And the coolest thing was it's kind of, I thought at least, it fits the way I think, like, I have something in my mind, and I can just go and prototype it really quickly. So, yeah, I loved React from the get-go.
What would you say was the thing that made prototyping quick? What was the biggest difference in React from other libraries that you used that kind of stood out to you as making things quicker, that made it easier to dive into or to jump into and be immediately productive?
Basically, it was what everyone was saying React did wrong. They said, React doesn't separate concerns. But they said, you have a view and everything is like mixed together.
Uh-huh.
But it was the first time where I realized, hey, it should be mixed together. And that even for me, even today, like animation, styles, everything that has to do with the view belongs to the view. It's the same layer. Even to this day, I'm like totally opposed to CSS and animation, like even a radical way. I don't even want to do much in it. For me, it just makes sense. Everything is reflective. I have state. And my view is reflective of state. I think this was a genius principle.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's talk about the history then of React and animation. So there's been a long history. I think that we've been kind of trying to figure out this animation piece for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's like, you know, React CSS Transition Group, I think, was the first foray into animating certain components with enter and leave states, which I think turned into React Transition Group. And there was React Motion in there was a concept for a while, and animated by Christopher Chedeau. And there's been like a lot of techniques. Could you say from your perspective kind of what we learned from each of those big kind of milestones in React Animation?
Yeah, I think we made lots of progress, and it's so cool that there's so many different things that evolved out of this ecosystem. Personally, the first thing I saw was React Motion, and this immediately like spoke to me, because there's a little background. In the Android days, I don't know if people still remember this. Facebook released some like app. It was called Chat Heads. Do you know what this is?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. And the heads kind of move around in with a spring type of following each other.
Right, and I did something similar. It was called Halo, but it could receive like notification from any app. It wasn't like just Messenger, but the point was that Chat Heads felt so natural, and I know I used up like weeks trying to tweak my easings and durations and all this stuff, and never even got near like how natural the original felt. And I basically just gave up at the time. And I knew that they were doing something like with springs. I didn't know what this was. I thought it's crazy. But it's passed a couple of years, and there's React Motion. And the primary principle is springs. And this immediately made sense to me. But at the time, I couldn't handle the RenderPops API. It was like very new at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt so strange. I felt, oh, what is this? Come on. And I couldn't bring myself to actually use it. I later on, I use it and I love it, but I still put it back. I like it because it has springs, I said to myself, but oh no, I won't use render props. And then I go to Animated. And Animated, even to this day, it's my favorite like piece of engineering in the React ecosystem. I think this guy, Christopher Chidot, he did some things with it that are really revolutionary, even today. Like the way he treats these animated properties. But obviously, it's also a focus on springs, which I liked. And I started using this. And the way it works, you have these little handles, and you can basically just reuse them in your view. They are like self-updating. And basically, you don't render out the animation. You render or animate outside of React, which made it really performant. Mm. But the problem with this is it's a little bit imperative, right? Meaning you have like lots of these loose end animation handles. You have one for opacity, one for color, and you need to orchestrate. You need to stop this and cancel that and start something else, and they're all async. And in the end, it's easy to end up with some salad of concerns. It's nothing against this library. It's just the approach. It's a little bit more low level. This is exactly the way I used to handle animation in Android or prior. And this was the problem that actually made me look for React Motion. And my goodness, I thought this is genius, because animation now, it's just reflective of state. I have some config and I say, okay, opacity. If props visible is true, it's one. If not, it's zero. And it just manages all by itself. I don't need to chase behind some handles and close this and destroy that. That was really, my goodness, it was genius. But the downside, of course, was that it renders out everything through React. So every time you have some interpolated property, like going from 0 to 1, you have 0.1, 0.2, and so on, thousands more. Each one represents a React render pass, which makes it not so performant, at least if you deal with bigger components. This was already the moment where I saw that, hey, these two, they're really cool. And they have like upsides and downsides. For instance, another upside of Animated was you can feed it everything. You give it a color, say RGB or red, and you want to turn it to blue, you can just do it. React Motion is just a value interpolator. It can just interpolate values, and I found it increasingly hard to like interpolate into colors and box shadow and other stuff. So these two, I knew I liked them, but they weren't enough. This was the moment where I decided, hey, maybe I should try something.
This is interesting. Right in the beginning of your documentation, you really do pay tribute to both of these libraries, React Motion and Animated. And so is it safe to say that React Motion kind of has a very declarative API, and there are, you know, side effects of that, which are, you know, it's rendering those components every single time. And then Animated is more imperative, where you're responsible for doing a lot more of the actual work. Is that about right?
Yes, that's about right. I mean, these are like these two approaches that you normally take to animation. And I don't even think one is better than the other. Like nowadays, I think both are suitable for different problems. Like I would say, if you ask me now, that the imperative way is perhaps better for things like gaming or storytelling. Like we all have seen these really cool things that, I don't know, how's her name, Sarah Drasner?
Yes.
Yeah. She made these cool like SVG stories start to move, and she really tells stories with this. And the imperative way is very flexible for this. But at the same time, it's not the best approach for UI. Because UI is reflective of state, and the declarative way, the animation becomes part of the declaration. You declare the animation itself, and it makes it very comfortable because you never chase anything, no loose ends, no handles. So yes, these are the two approaches, and I went with the declarative approach initially because I wanted to mostly serve UI, not like gaming or storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that right now, as the library sits today, is it still primarily declarative, or are there ways to kind of get down into a more imperative level?
Yeah, this is the question. You know, to make animation declarative, it's great, but it has many, many downsides as well. And I noticed, because people come to my GitHub issue tracker and they complain about this or they want that, and I just couldn't solve their problems for them anymore. I mean, sure, there were like edge cases, but you declare an animation, you say you go from 0 to 1 and it runs because you have declared it. But how do you actually like stop it, interrupt it? How do you orchestrate? How do you make sure that this animation comes to rest and then you start something else? These were the problems I couldn't solve. Only like with some weird hacks, like there's some immediate flag and things like this. But this was awkward and I knew it, but I had no idea how to solve it. And then came, of course, hooks. And I think this changed everything because now we are in between the two. Hooks aren't imperative and they aren't declarative. Hooks are not just functions. They are functions with state or stateful. I don't know how do they actually, they say something like effects. There was a word they were throwing.
Oh, algebraic effects.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means, but I do know that the term exists.
Yeah. It sounds impressive. I mean, but it makes sense. It's not just a function. It's something in between. And this is so cool because with hooks, you still have the declarative aspect. You still have the view, but you don't change the view anymore. You don't accommodate for animation. Your view is as it was, which is beautiful. But at the same time, you still have the configs which you had in React Motion. You still can say opacity this, color that, and we'll just go. But you're still in between. You can like stop it, interrupt it. You can catch the animation and say, you run when this one comes to rest. So right now, I think we're in between these two aspects. And in my opinion, it's at the moment, I think it's the best way.
That's really interesting. I've had a lot of conversations with people about the ergonomics of hooks and how hooks allow you to write code in a way that, for example, you mentioned render props and how when you first approach it, there's that shock of, you know, what is this? Because it just looks so horrifying when paired with JSX. And I hear a lot about the ergonomics of hooks and how that allows people to write render prop type code, but without the actual render props. But this is interesting that this is enabling you to create new functionality that was incredibly difficult before. What are some of the specific features that you have found to be more easily enabled through hooks that were not very obvious before?
I mean, the obvious things is the same thing you get in the internet when people ask for this, like mix-ins and higher order components and render props. They have some downsides, and usually people will say, okay, these downsides are fixed and you can now group responsibilities and so on and so forth. So obviously this is very good, but in the perspective of animation, it enables something that I didn't think was doable before, because we are already used to accommodate our views to our animation primitives. We say, this is my view. Mm-hmm. Like you have a button, you click it and pops up some, I don't know, dialogue. And if you click the X, it goes away. And you say, okay, now I want to make it move. So how do I do it? And we are kind of used, we have this mental model that we need to wrap it and put some magic things in it and whatever. Mm-hmm. And with hooks, no, you've used the same as before. You just put some utility function in between, and it turns your statics into movable values. Like you surely have something like an opacity. And if you press the button, opacity goes 1 because now it's visible. I mean, it's very simplified, but let's picture it like this. But now all you need to do is put a hook in between, and it turns the opacity into something that that can move, that can animate. And the view mostly doesn't change. You just slap the property into the view, and boom, you have it. And to me, this is actually beautiful, because many people ask me, how do you learn to animate? And I think the thing I learned now is that the best way to animate is to not animate first. Your application does everything what you needed to do. If you have this down, then to turn it into something that moves becomes easy, or easier with hooks, because your view is the same. And basically you just turn around these values that have been static before. And this is the approach that I love most about hooks. And the other one has to do with interacting with other things going on, like other libraries and the environment, things that were really hard to do with mix-ins, because now it's all linear. You can say, this hook gives me this result, I use it in the next hook, and so on and so forth. So you can make some linear chain of responsibility. And it's really cool, to me at least.
Yeah. It's amazing. I love discovering new ways that hooks have empowered UI authoring. So now with hooks, you had mentioned the problems of that declarative model with render props. Do hooks help solve any of the performance problems that we had before, or does that give you new methods of solving them?
No, I mean, yes or no. It depends, because React Spring, it inherits the root, the core of animated. It started out as a fork of the library that Christopher Chido made. So we always render outside of React if we can. So React isn't even involved. We directly mutate the view. So you have a component, you render it, you could slap a console lock in there. You will see it just renders once, even if it animates. It doesn't matter, because React Spring does this for you outside. And this remains the same with hooks. But the problem is, if you have something like events, like if you drag something around, then this causes this causes state because you need to push state into the component again, and then the spring renders and so on. So previously with render props, it could be fast, but the moment you go into some event-driven stuff, it turns slow again because you need to render out event data, like where's the mouse pointer right now? And with hooks, yes, you can change or mutate the animation completely outside of React, even in events. So this is, I think it's more performant in a way.
Yeah. Now I'd like to talk about how this project, React Animated, relates to other projects. You've been doing a couple other things that are really fascinating with really brilliant demos. You have React Use Gesture, which is a new hook for gestures, and then also React 3 Fiber. Can you tell me how those are related to React Spring?
Gestures started, I was actually trying to put gestures into React Spring, but I realized that this isn't the path I want to go. Usually I like things to be very atomic. Do one thing and do it well. Mm-hmm. And I'm stretching the code right now. I create responsibilities that maybe aren't even cross-platform anymore. So if I hamper the adoption even of the library, if I would do this. So I thought, how can I solve this? And I started to play around to abstract. And I figured, hey, actually, something like a gesture isn't so hard. You can abstract it pretty easily, even complex stuff like dragging something around and calculating like velocity and direction. It's not so hard. But how do I actually make it so that these two libraries now start to mesh, to work with one another? And this changed a little bit how React Spring worked. And in a way, it turned it more like open. And this helped me later greatly by incorporating other things into it. So yeah, the spring is just a spring. It's just it's a value interpolator. But now it can be like, it can work together with practically everything. And this was React Gesture. The project is now handled by David Bismuth. And yes, I think it's pretty cool that also it's totally based on hooks and also demonstrates how neatly hooks can work together, because you have these two completely asinine different things. They can just they can just mesh. They can just say, I use something from this hook. If you have seen the demos, the gesture hook, for instance, it just calls like into the spring. It says spring set, and then it works. And it works outside of React, which is super cool. and 3Fiber is really special to me. This is the project I'm working now. Like, it takes a little bit of my focus now, because this goes a little bit into the performance concerns, because I still think that the DOM is terribly slow, and I've stopped putting like my hopes into some vendor that will come along and they make everything fast. I don't think it will ever happen. They're telling us that the DOM will be fast like for 20 years. And like CSS, they say, it's GPU driven. But still, the thing is going to choke. I can choke CSS by, I don't know, putting 20 div boxes on screen. There was a really funny tutorial from this Google guy. It was about parallax scrolling. And he goes like through different things you can do to make it fast. In the end, he just concludes, use WebGL. but it is like this. And I think, to me, now it makes sense, because you can actually like separate concerns, do everything that has to do with visuals and stuff like this. You can do it in GL. It can be really, really fast. And you can still mix and match it with like layouting, for which the DOM is great. So actually, to me, it's like my dream, because now I have a layout engine that I can like abuse totally just for layout. And I can just mix it with something like visual and make something really, really cool that would be impossible to do with the DOM. I don't even care. People say, the next animation API will change everything, the web API, blah, blah, blah. And it's slow. I don't think it's the solution, to me at least.
So is React 3 Fiber a different renderer for React?
Yes, it's a reconciler. It's used React Fiber, and there's a project called React Reconciler. And with this, you can make your own target. It's actually very simple to create a basic render target. But then you can actually mix them, which is cool. You have like a DOM, and then you can say, okay, now yeah. I render into 3, and this is pretty wild.
Now, many of these examples are just gorgeous, absolutely stunning. Do you have a design background, or are you just interested in art?
No, I don't have a design background, but most of my family, they're all artists. Like, my dad is a painter, my sister's a designer, my mom was a painter. So as a kid, I would like also make sculptures and paint and stuff like this, but I have no background. Mm-hmm. I think my parents, my dad, he didn't like that I go into computing so much, but then he see the things that I'm doing, and he's now really happy about this. But yeah, I'm like the black sheep in the family in a way, but I still like things to be visual, but I don't have any background whatsoever.
So for people who are looking to explore this, what are some really good examples of places that you would want to get from kind of like DOM layout related stuff and try something like React 3 Fiber?
You mean if they want to learn?
Yeah, if they wanted to learn, or, you know, where would this be like a good fit for... like, what kind of project might be a good fit for giving React 3 Fiber a try?
Yeah, okay. I guess most of us, I mean, if you have Twitter, you must have seen these crazy websites that are going around. There's this awards committee. It's called AWWW Awards, something like this. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to pronounce this.
Yeah. I think it's like awards.
Something like this.
We'll link it. Yeah.
Yeah. And each and every website on this is almost impossible to do with the DOM. And then you look into how they do it, and it's like canvas with a little bit of like layout on top of it. And then I try to track down the people that do these sites. One of them was called Artiste Binoir or something like this. And he's like made half of these pages, and they're not possible. They're not possible. Give up. You cannot do it with the DOM. The effects that I do. There was one of some Japanese photographer, and this site was so crazy that I almost thought like, hey, I throw down everything I have. I don't even care anymore. I plant fruits now. I give up like this because it was so far away from what I thought I could do. And I already thought that, hey, I've acquired some little knowledge. I can animate this and that. But this was so crazy that it was impossible. I was speechless. And then I started to like track them down, and I talked to them and tried to squeeze them into like, how the hell did you do this? And obviously they're like very a little bit like shy. They don't want to give the information just like this, but they give me a little bit, a couple of hints. And then I go and try I don't know. I take 3.js. and try to make something like this. And I notice, hey, this is cool, but at the same time, it sucks because it's really hard. And I miss React. I miss the way that I can use React and manage my view. This is how it was born. And I think it helps for everything that has to do with visuals. Like, you can now mix the concerns. You have layout, and you can have something... like something crazy.
So when you're working with React 3 Fiber, I'm not too familiar with 3.js in general. Do you do everything in code, or is there a way to map it to visual tools that allow you to build animations?
No, you do most of the stuff in code in the editor. It's a painful process sometimes, but it gets easier the more you do it. But I leave this to people that know 3.js. For me, it started a little bit like a hobby project, but at the same time, I use all these libraries also at work, and we do lots of like 3D and CAD stuff. So I like to blur the lines a little bit and also have fun at the same time.
Yeah.
But I'm not like the super knowledgeable person about these matters. I just try around a little bit and I see the potential, and I know there's lots of people that want to have these crazy websites, and I think now they have the possibility, because previously this is open just to a very small subset of the JavaScript front-end community.
Yeah.
They even have different job postings for these people. They are called like the GL talent or something. And 3.js is not so hard. You can learn it. There's like, I've seen it recently called 3.js Fundamentals webpage that goes really in depth. And if you're coming from some front-end perspective like I do, you don't need to go super deep into this. You just want, I don't know, to have some little meshes and some shaders. You can steal this off Shader Toy, is the website is called. So with a little bit of background, you can already do some serious damage that will make your project like really stand out. But I'm not like the knowledgeable person when it comes to this stuff.
Well, I'm sure there's tons of resources on the 3.js site.
There is definitely.
Cool. Well, I have a bunch of questions from people on Twitter, and I wanted to get questions from people because I don't do a lot of animating in my personal work. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to kind of get some other people's questions and see their thoughts about React Spring. And so I'm just going to hit set some of them up, and you can knock them down. Hypertext asks, what's the need for the different render targets? For example, React Spring /3. If I'm using a custom GL library with React, should I create a new target?
Yeah, okay. So React Spring is cross-platform, right? But each platform has like specifics. It has like its own colors, or the web has like units like px and percentages, all this stuff. So you need to teach React Spring a little bit more, but you can use it also just like this. It's called /universal, and then it can animate everything. You could use it, I don't know, on your refrigerator. I have actually used it in the shell, like it was called React Blast or something. You can make shell apps, and I wanted to try, and you can just, boom, put React Spring in it, and then you can animate the stuff. That's pretty cool. But if you want to go deeper, you need to teach it a little bit about the platform itself. These targets are just very little specifics, not so much. So you can make your own, of course. If you have like Pixie, it's a 2D canvas renderer, and you want to animate this with React Spring, you can just look into the targets and make your own. It's really easy to do.
But that, and what would someone use to make those targets?
It's all exposed. There's like an object called Globals. You can fetch it from React Spring, and it has a couple of injects, and these injects teach React Spring. So you can inject your colors, you can inject your units, you can inject your style transforms, everything that's needed for the platform. But the most important part is teaching React Spring to animate performantly. It needs to know how to apply values. But that's not so hard. People can, if they are interested in this, they can just look into the repository /targets, and then they can go through a couple of them. Conva, 3, Native, they're really small if they want to make their own.
And these are the same primitives that you're using to kind of inject the platform into your different platform support, right?
Yes, the 3 renderer of React Spring /3, for instance, it's the same. I just teach it that 3 doesn't have like div, span, h1, and so on. It has mesh, line, different native elements. And these are the things I have to teach it. It's very little code to do this. And then you can just use it and animate away on any platform you want. Basically, it's cross-platform.
Awesome. Now, Varenya90 asks, is there a way to cleanly disable animations based on which browser is being used or a particular device if they want to just turn animations off for a specific, maybe low-powered device, I'm assuming?
Yes, at the moment, not. We're talking about this on GitHub right now. There's an issue for this. There will probably be something like a global config that gets merged into everything else system-wide. And then you probably could do something like immediate true, and every Spring will just conclude to end state. But at the moment, it's not really done. But this would also be cool for testing. People have often had these arguments. They want to test just the end state. They don't care about the animation in the test itself. But this will probably be in version 9, which is upcoming.
Cool. What are some common pitfalls for people who are starting to animate UI? Are there things that people animate that they shouldn't? Is that something that you kind of stay out of? You handle things more from the library level? Or do you have opinions on what people should be animating in their UI?
Yeah. Do we really want to go into this? I could give you some longer answer for this, because also interesting maybe. Yeah,
absolutely. Go for it.
I think the animation problem has two sides. One is principles and one is the API. One is the philosophy and the other has to do with how do I actually do it. And most of the time I see people only worry about the API. Like on Twitter, I see, the future is here. The web animation API will change everything. But they never talk about principles, and there everything for me starts because for some reason, I'm not sure what happened or how this came to be, but we think of animation in terms of duration and easing. This is a major, major pitfall. It's regrettable. I don't even know how this came to pass. And this is not as it should be. Actually, there was something I remember now. Matt Perry, the creator of PopMotion, he said something in the interview. What was it? He said, we create something and we may even like it, but then we come back to it like a week later, a month later, and we hate it. It falls apart. And I think this is, everyone knows this, right? Happens to the best of us. And he concluded saying that maybe animation is not timeless. What we like now, we may not like tomorrow. Was it something like this?
I think so. That does sound familiar.
Yeah.
And that was episode 35?
Yeah. Something like
this. Is that right?
Yeah. And on one side, I totally agree because it happens to me so often, especially with the Android stuff. When I come back to it now, it looks horrible, like really embarrassing. What the hell did I think when I did this? But at the same time, there's a reason why it looks like crap. It's and I'm also not really in agreement that animation is not timeless. And I think there's an answer for this, and it's an easy answer. Nothing in the world we inhabit looks like what we animate. Nothing ever does. It just is not natural. And this is something which I think is super important for animation. And this actually, Christopher Chidou, Cheng Lu, the people behind these libraries, animated React Spring, and Facebook overall, because even in the beginning, they always used Springs also with chat ads and so on. They recognized this immediately. There's something missing. Why do we think of animation in terms of duration easing? Does this make sense? In front of me, I have a table and I have an object and I slide it over to the other side. How long do you think will take to reach the other side?
I wouldn't be able to know.
Yeah, because the question is stupid, doesn't make any sense. But web developer says, I know, transition, all 1 second, ease in, cubic, in, out, I don't know what. And this is silly. The only answer is it depends. Like, depends on the friction of the table, depends on how hard I push the object, how much mass does the object have. So, and I think there's something hidden in this. I once in my life, I studied philosophy, and there was something really interesting to me. If you ask anyone today, is beauty in the eye of the beholder? I mean, what will most people answer? What do you think? Yeah.
Probably exactly. Yes.
But I was shocked that in the old times, they were like in total disagreement with this. They said, no, beauty is an objective concept. You can express beauty because beauty is guided by laws, by mathematics, by physics. And this, in some ways, is really true. Nothing that we see is accidental. Even nature, like the forms that we see, the forms that a leaf takes, the form that the shape of our bodies is fashioned after the golden ratio and all this stuff. It's not accidental. And since we are like fashioned after the same principles that guide everything in nature, in us, or we have also something like an urgency or capacity to recognize beauty. And beauty and harmony is not accidental. Is a law, like in music theory or in color theory. They all know this, but for some reason in animation, we tend to ignore. So I think this is something that these people, they recognized immediately. And if you have some environment which is proper, which is guided by physics, then anything that moves will behave in a natural, harmonic way. No matter, you don't need to think about like durations and curves and so on. Like if you have an object, like say a ball, whatever, you throw it, you don't think about it. It just flies and flies naturally. So this is my goal for animation. I want to have an interface that you just say, okay, this turns green and this goes from left to right. And you don't care. You just let it go. And I think this is why I think Spring is the most important aspect of animation, for me at least. So the biggest pitfall is thinking that you should think of animation in terms of time and in terms of curves. I will never do this again, but I was so badly burned in my Android days that I learned the hard way. But in the web, I see lots of people say, no, you should, if it's small, you should do it in CSS. Yes, do it in CSS, but you will come to regret it because the moment you interact with it, it looks like shit. And there's nothing you can do about it. You don't notice it in easy animations if you have a sidebar and it just pops open. Yes, it doesn't matter if it takes 1 second or 2 seconds, but if you're bored midway, it does matter, because what will happen, it will just naively stand still, and then would it take the same time, like backwards, also 2 seconds, even if you interrupt it midway. And this doesn't make sense. If you have like an object and you tie it to a spring and you slide it over the table and midway you yank it back, what will happen? It just doesn't like stand still and then it moves towards you. It will expend the rest of its energy, of its momentum, and it will move towards you. And this creates a natural, fluid movement. This is why iOS looks so, so good, because mostly everything they do is driven by springs. And to me, it's like the guiding principle of everything I do in animation. So if you want your animation to look good and timeless, like even ChatHeads, this is an app I haven't used maybe for 6 years or something. But I know that if I open this up today, it will look good because it behaves naturally, harmonically. And yes, this is the most important thing, I guess. I mean, this is a super long answer, but it's also super important to me.
No, I think that's critically important for answering the question of why this library exists and the challenges of animating. Just in summary, though, so that I understand it, This does seem to go back to your original exploration with trying to recreate chat heads. And when you're trying to animate it using the tools at hand, it just never quite felt right. And so each time you came back to it, it was like, that's not right. It needs to be better. But it's kind of a moving target. You couldn't quite get there. And what it sounds like Spring Physics allow you to do is to think about the characteristics of that thing. Think about its weight. Think about it, the friction surrounding all that. And then not think about, like you're saying, duration. And that these actually enable you to think about animation in a more kind of like physical, natural way, because you're not thinking about animation. You're thinking about the properties that give this thing its mass and shape and character.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe not even this. I think for me, it's more like thinking about the environment. You set up an environment that is physically proper and sound. And if you have an environment, it could even be just the default that you get with React Spring, then everything that moves inside this environment will behave proper. You don't need to think about it at all. You just say, this thing turns red, I don't know, whatever. It goes here, it goes there. Mm-hmm. It will always look good. No matter what you do, you cannot make it look bad because it's harmonic. And this is the thing I really like about it. Like most of my personal stuff, I don't use configs. I don't put a mass on this thing. I could if I wanted it to move a little bit slower. But I know that in accordance to everything else, it will always look good. And this is like, actually, it's even the old way the old philosophers defined what is beauty. They define beauty as it's something in accordance to the laws that surround it. It's the same thing in music theory. I have a little music background. Like the diatonic scale, major scale, you cannot say it is bad because each note sounds in accordance to the whole. They cannot cancel one another out. They cannot. They all sound in accordance. And this was deemed good or beautiful or harmonic. That's why we call it harmony. And the opposite is disharmony. And you cannot produce disharmony if you have an environment in which everything moves according to physical laws. And this makes a huge difference, But sure, you can say this thing has mass. And I know people get a little bit hung up because they come to React Spring and they say, where's my duration? And they say, it's not... You can forget it. Yeah, but what are these weird configs, friction, mass, what is this? But actually, you don't need it. If you like go into it a little bit deeper, you can use it. But the cool thing is, even if you change like mass for one object, it will still move in accordance with everything else because the guiding principles are the same. And this makes it... For me, it makes it nice. I mean, I don't even look at animation libraries that don't put Springs as the primary interface to animation. If there's something that comes along, and Springs is basically like a tag on, it's duration based, but you can maybe use Springs. I don't care. I don't want to look at it. I don't feel to use it. Same goes with CSS. Yes, I could. Maybe it would even be easier. I could, I don't know, some hover and the thing gets bigger. But I know it will never look fluid because based on time. And I won't use it even for little things like hover and things like this. I know people go crazy about this, but normally I'm like super defensive if I like something and I need to defend it, blah, 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 in the internet and cause fights and all this. But for some reason, not about this. It's. I'm so convinced by it that to me, it's just natural. And if someone doesn't like this, they use something else.
Well, Paul, this is amazing. This is right up my alley. I could listen to you talk about philosophy and physics and harmony in relation to our work and animation all day. But I do want to close with a few questions, just about the library itself. The final question is just, what does V9 look like? What should people be looking forward to? And I guess related is the Hooks API part of V9, or is that something that people can use today?
I mean, yeah, Hooks is part of V8, so you want to use Hooks.
Okay.
V9 is mostly about bug fixes. This was Alec Larson's work. He's a co-author and slash contributor. And yeah, mostly like bug fixes, stuff like this. We want also to merge back render pops again because it caused some huge like schism before. So you will be able to use the same in the same export. I'm not sure if they will be breaking changes. I hope not. This was funny because you know who's Scott Tulinski from Level Up?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he made some awesome tutorial. And he asked me prior, he said, hey, Paul, is the API stable now or is it going to change? I say, yeah, sure, it's stable. You can go ahead. And then he gives me the link and I listen to it and he says, yeah, some of these things, it's all super great, but some of these it could be easier. And I think, oh, okay, could be easier. Let's put it on GitHub and Twitter and ask people how they would think it could be made easier. And then we start some discussion and we find some API that would basically reduce complexity by half because each primitive
wow.
has two API signatures right now. But I'm not sure if I want to do this to him again. So it would be his own fault. But maybe wait a little bit. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess if he asked for it, he kind of has to, you know, take it in stride. We actually just had our last chat was with Scott. That was the episode that just went out. And that course looks amazing. And that was one of the reasons I was like, I really need to talk to Paul because he's doing some amazing stuff. And a lot of people are really excited about seeing this API kind of come forth from what has been before. It really does seem kind of like the spiritual successor to Animated. And people are really loving it.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Cool. Well, is there anything that you would like to leave us with? I feel like I got way more than I came for today, which I'm grateful for. Hearing you talk about harmony and physics and philosophy all melded together really gives me a lot more context for the spirit behind this library.
Yeah, it's just my background. I guess I'm not sure. I guess I'm just happy that this thing goes forward. I managed to put it on its own, like, neutral organization so that my name isn't necessarily attached to it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes it possible for other people to get involved, which I like. I mean, it's totally cool to me that they start to improve it and they go and they hold talks. Like, Alec Larson, for instance, he made a talk at React Europe recently. So I think this is the way forward. I don't want it to just fall asleep because maybe the maintainer does something else or something. So I hope it's something that will be always evolving. And yeah, we always like taking criticism and feedback into account. People know this. And yeah, I'm super happy with where this whole thing was going. And I hope it continues its path.
Awesome. Well, it's been a delight talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to episode 56 of React Podcast. For links and show notes, visit reactpodcast.com/56. This week, I was struck by Paul's quest for lasting beauty on the web. It's admirable, and what he says about the philosopher's definition of beauty will stick with me. Beauty is a law. It's something that lives in accordance and harmony with the laws around it. Go and add a little lasting beauty to the web with React Spring. Thanks again to Git Prime. Start debugging your development processes today. Download 20 patterns to watch for in your engineering team by visiting gitprime.com/20patterns. This episode of React Podcast was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson. You can find React Podcast on Spec, a network to help designers and developers level up. Visit spec.fm to find other shows that will take you further in your career. Help us out by reviewing this show on iTunes. Your reviews help the show grow and help us ensure great guests and awesome content week to week. To join the discussion, visit reactpodcast.com/chat or follow us on Twitter at reactpodcast. I'm at Chantastic. To stay out of the discussion but get updates, visit reactpodcast.com/news and sign up for emails. Thanks so much for giving us your attention. We'll be in your ears again next week.